welcome to the third hour on a Wednesday of Talk of the Town. This is Left, Right, and Center. On the left of the political spectrum, Jeff Schlemmer, local London lawyer and political activist. On the right side of the spectrum is Robert Metz, Ontario president?
Yes.
Of the Freedom Party.
That's correct.
And but he's not here to represent the Freedom Party, and Jeff's not here to represent the NDP. That's just simply two gentlemen of divergent views about what's going on in our community and our society in general. We thought it might be interesting this morning, and I'm kind of curious to hear this too. We have kind of dealt with this issue as we've gone along. But I thought it would be interesting this morning to ask these two gentlemen to analyze each other, not as individuals, but as they are perceived. When the left, quote, again, looks at the right, quote, what do they see? And vice versa, when the right looks at the left, what do they see? I'm going to ask Jeff Schlemmer to start. And again, we're not talking necessarily about Bob and Jeff, but just kind of in general terms. And then we're going to expand the discussion and ask you where you think these lines are drawn. But Jeffrey, when people talk to you about the right, now you get a chance to talk to Bob every week, and I'm guessing that there are probably a lot of people on the left side of the spectrum who never get a chance to sit down kind of one-on-one and discuss issues calmly and sensibly with someone who's, you know, quite a bit different in terms of the political beliefs. If someone were to say to you, what do you think the right represents in our community or our province or our country? What's your answer? What do you think the right is all about?
Well, there's obviously all kinds of different areas you can get into talking about, but I think that in a broad general sense that the right represents people who believe in freedom, as Bob would say, I think, and that it's the difference between a basically society where you make your own way, you're independent, and the chips fall where they may, which is sort of how I perceive the right, versus the left are sort of the more touchy-feely, we're a big community, we should try and get along, help each other out, and all that kind of thing. I think both sides value similar things in the sense that they both value achievement, they both value hard work, they value, I think they both value, larger things, integrity certainly, or if you go down the line, there are all kinds of things they're similar on, but I think that at the end of the day, it's sort of a question of do you make your own way in the world or do you try and make it as a group?
Bob, from your perspective on the right side of the political line, when you look at the left, what do you see there?
Well, it's interesting because I think the basic difference, Jeff has alluded to it here a bit, he talks about the right being more independent, more individualistic. I would think most people would view the left as being more collective. More collectivist is the term that we use. The thing that distinguishes a left-wing collective approach from a voluntary collective approach, which would exist under a right-wing type of a concept, is the fact that under the left-wing concept, you have to be forced into that collective. And basically, a major thing with left-wing ideology is that left-wing philosophy deals with group rights, rather than with individual rights. More to the point, we have, you know, French rights, language rights, rights based on race, rights based on economic status, rights based on sex. People are grouped into these groupings rather than treated as individuals.
If we look, for example, at the Ontario provincial government, characterized as a far-right government in the minds of many, let me ask you, Bob, is that a right-wing government in the sense that you just talked about? I mean, there's still a lot of collective ideals there that they espouse?
Not in my mind. I see, again, I'm a fragment of the right. I look at the Ontario Conservatives, and I still see them as being, let us say, left of center. In terms of what I view as a freedom point of view, is I'd like to see, for example, in healthcare and education, a much more free market, much more competition, much more choice in insurance and healthcare and choice of schools, teachers, qualifications. Everything should be diversified. Whereas I think if you're talking from a left-wing point of view, you're still looking at a state monopoly, at a controlled system. Now, the problem is some of the left and right wing labels blur in a large sense, because I'm not a traditional right winger. I would say that traditionally the difference between the left and right are the way they view property to a large degree. Mm-hmm. The left wing views property as a public commodity, whereas the right should, you know, views it as a private commodity, but often wants to control it, which is the part of the right wing that I disagree with.
Jeff, I want to ask you the same question about our Ontario government. Again, the public perception of many is that it is a right-wing government. Bob says, well, in many ways it's not. What's your analysis, again, from your perspective? Is this a right-wing government in this province?
Oh, I would have thought it was a very right-wing government, and that from my end of it, I think that this government's trying to, again, get back to individual rights. One of the things that I don't agree with Bob, and that is a question of whether the left involves forcing people into collective as opposed to right not forcing people. I think that force is a separate thing, and we see totalitarian governments on both the left and the right throughout history, and nobody really likes force. However, I think that it's more a question of whether you see that the best society you can create for yourself is involved in working together. And we're going to get into buzzwords here, and working together, I can tell, isn't the right word I really mean because it sounds touchy-feely, but basically, the difference between whether you think that our society is best served by letting individuals go out and make their own way and do the best they can for themselves, and the Adam Smith invisible hand will then, you know, rise up our level of our standard of living, will make the best possible society for ourselves. I think the left and the right both want to create the best societies we can, but we have a different vision of how you go about getting there.
There's a big difference. You seem to think that by some collective effort that those individuals who have to earn their own way don't have to do that anymore. They still do. In fact, they have to work harder because there's more people carried on their back who don't want to work or who can't work or whatever else.
Well, that's what you believe. So, but sure, you have to work hard under both, but it's a question from my end of it as to whether you're going to be further ahead as a society at the end of the day by sort of having intervention in
what do you mean by
lives.
Further ahead? This is a big question because how are you defining your ideal society? You may be defining something totally different than I would aspire to, and therefore we're using cross judgments over the same things.
I'd be interested in talking about that with you because my thinking is that what we'd like to do is have a society where everybody's got enough to get by, basically everybody's got enough food, shelter, and all that kind of stuff, where people can lead fulfilling lives, where people can contribute, because I think that that's something that does make your life richer. And again, I can make them back to my sort of Christian thing, but this whole idea of selflessness as being something that makes you feel good. Maybe ultimately it's the most selfish thing you can do. I don't know.
Well, I think the history of mankind, you know, if you go back to ancient history, I don't know whether you would have called some of the ancient tribes left or right wing or whatever, but generally mankind's history has been a bloody feud and battle since the beginning, and that's how major changes have come. And I think that the advantage of living in a free society and a civilized society, and I define civilization on this premise, that force must be banned from human relationships. To the degree that a society bans the initiation of force by one person to another, whether that's through government, through any agency or whatever, to that degree the society is civilized. To the degree that the society institutionalizes that force, that society becomes less civilized.
Let me ask a question of each of you here. I want to involve human nature, and I recognize that's a large area to go into, but I want to try to narrow it down as much as I can. Would either of you disagree with the premise that the more productive individuals among us do tend to be individuals? In other words, positive selfishness, the idea that I'm going to work hard for the gains that I get, tends to be a motivator in our society. The people that lead the society, and not necessarily politically, but in other ways, tend to be people who bust their butts on an individual basis to get ahead because that tends to be human nature. Jeff, would you disagree with that?
Well, it depends how you're measuring it. If you're measuring it by money or by things that you accumulate, then I think you're right, that the people who are working for their selfish best interests are the most productive. They make, the most money. But they also have created a lot of the infrastructure in our society, that land developers, you know, they build places for us to live and so on. Although it's hard to compare that to somebody like a Mother Teresa, who one might argue works equally hard but in a different way, and it really has nothing to show for it at the end of the day.
Which is more emblematic, you think, of human beings, the human experience as a whole? Is it the businessman who works hard and, as you say, provides places to live and cars to drive and TVs to buy and so on, makes a lot of money, puts a lot of it back into the community investment and so on, or a Mother Teresa who really, you know, gave herself? Which is more representative of human beings as a whole, do you think?
Well, that's a good
not in an ideal world, but in a practical world, the world that we live in.
The world we live in, I would say that the former, the folks who work for themselves, because that's what we've tended to value in our society.
Bob, is it a question that we value that, or is that Human nature coming to the fore.
I would have said both are human nature. I've already said that I think Mother Teresa did what she did because she enjoyed doing it. I know all kinds of people who are doing things not for monetary gain. It's ironic that it's always the left that seems to be so focused on the economic of things, or, you know, as if to say that we're always measuring things economically. I'm not. But economics is an important measurement of things, but it only measures trade. It only measures things that we physically trade and do between each other. It doesn't measure love. It doesn't measure other values that we have in life, although they are ultimately reflected in our economy. You can tell where the money goes in terms of our aesthetic preferences, whether it's in entertainment or whatever. But I think people generally act in their rational self-interest, and when they're in a collective situation, that process becomes, well, perverted in a way. Because when you are suddenly forced to work for others, your motivation is going to disappear.
Well, that's where I wanted to get with this. The idea that there's a certain, and you gentlemen both know, many of our listeners do, that if you look at a circle, and if you say that, let's look at the clock, all right? At 6 o'clock on the clock sits the people in the center. At 10 o'clock and at 2 o'clock sit the people respectively on the left and the right. If you go up to noon, they tend to meet again. There is a lot of common ground between, if people understand what I'm trying to say, that eventually as you go around, you find there's a lot of common ground between the right and the left. But my question is the left, as far as it goes, the idea of collectivism, the idea of collective security, the idea of the welfare state, the idea of trying to better the community as a whole, is that an attempt to change human nature or to expand on shall we say, a lesser developed side of human nature? In that sense, is it less natural than the people on the right who believe that most people are in it for what they get? And as Bob said, you said Mother Teresa was, and I think we'd have to admit that, right? She did get something out of it. She may have sacrificed selflessly in an economic sense, but obviously she got some rewards that kept her going, because we don't keep going unless we've got rewards. Jeff, I realize I'm kind of going around in a circle here. What I'm trying to get at, a lot of people suggested that this collective ideal on the left is more an ideology than a reflection of the reality of human nature, and that it is an attempt to kind of force people, perhaps, to be better than they naturally would be. I mean, better is not the right idea, but to convince them that if we all work together, we can make things better, even though it kind of goes against our instincts. Do you think it goes against our instincts?
No, I don't. But I think that we have been socialized for a long time. And Bob says for thousands of years we've had wars over trying to accumulate land, trying to dominate other people and so on. But I think that human nature is fairly malleable. It can go in one direction or another. Most of us just want to get along. We just want to get along with everybody else. And the question of sort of where the ideal of selflessness fits in there is one that, to me, is one that's not strongly reflected in our society today. For instance, our advertising values, accumulating things. It's always we have to buy cars, we have to buy stereos, we have to buy the biggest house we can get, and so on. We've gone down that road. But I'm interested in finding out from Bob sort of what other values there are out there other than the accumulation of wealth from the standpoint of the right. Because I think that there are a lot of shared values. And I think you once mentioned that maybe in Canada the right and left aren't as different as they might be in some other countries, because we have some shared values. But I have, when I wanted to bug a friend of mine who is an avowed right winger, I said, well, you know, when I talk to my kids about the difference between the right and left, I think that it comes down to a question of whether fundamentally you most strongly value selfishness or selflessness. And I said that obviously tongue-in-cheek, because I don't think that's right. But generally, though, that from the standpoint of the left, it seems to me that once you've got enough together for yourself to have some, you know, have your basic needs met, you've got some food, you've got a place to live and so on, the ideal that nobody ever achieves, but the ideal is to try to be selfless. It's to try to build a community. It's to try to help people who need help. That's what you'd like to ideally be trying to do. And I don't know if that's the same for the right.
You're describing hell to me. I would not want to live in a world where people were selfless, because those are the most dangerous people in the world. You don't know what motivates them. They change their mind from day to day. They're driven by ambitions beyond their own self-interest. And I wouldn't trust one as far as you could see them. You know, human nature and ideology, Jim, you were asking earlier about the left just being an ideological figment of someone's imagination. I think that if ideology doesn't suit human nature, It's a false ideology. And to try to impose it upon human beings becomes a moral crime, because you have to impose it. You cannot willingly tell people to accept this philosophy. They will not willingly accept it. Jeff asks, what are values beyond the economic? Well, you know, I come on this show every week. My ultimate value is freedom, individual freedom, which I think is the highest value that a society can have. And I think that freedom is under attack by both the left and right, I hate to say. I mean, in the sense that both would like to control different aspects of our freedom.
Is it certainty that causes us to want to control everybody?
Is it which?
Certainty? Is it certainty? A desire? Why do we want to control everybody?
Well, I think there's a strong sort of internal battle in every individual between wanting to be secure and wanting to have one's freedom, and there's a balance in there. As long as you're dealing with your own choices and your own resources and your own life, you have a freedom to make all the choices and decisions in that regard, but you don't have the right to make that for other people. And this is where I'm afraid a left-wing ideology departs from anything I could support. It would be wonderful if the left-wing ideology is so great, why isn't it a voluntary ideology? Why can't people just form their own communes and form their own collective enterprises and things like that?
Well, they can.
But they don't. So there must be something inherently wrong with it.
Well, some do, and that's what churches are to some extent. There are all kinds of examples in our community of subgroups of people who get together for whatever reason.
Sure, and social groups and social gatherings. I mean, there's everything from Star Trek clubs to religious gatherings, but these are non-economic activities, and I know people that are involved in a lot of them very heavily, but there is a lot of economics behind it. I mean,
this is Talk of the Town in 1290 CJBK, Economics Dictate. We pause for a moment. We'll continue with Left, Right, and Center right after this. It's Left, Right, and Center on Talk of the Town. And, of course, you're invited to join us at any time. I thought it might be interesting and instructive today to take a look at the positions of the left and the right and how they view themselves. Because usually on the program we talk about specific issues from these perspectives. I thought the perspectives themselves might be interesting to you, particularly if you're trying to decide for yourself exactly where you are in the political spectrum. I want to come back to a comment that Bob made a couple minutes ago about the group activities on the left tend to be coercive. There tends to be a sense that we're going to, and stop me if I'm wrong here, Bob, but the sense that the government is going to, for our benefit, is going to put us into these groups, is going to bring these groups together and sort of, you know, well, you may not like it now, but you'll like it eventually. Am I accurate in what you're saying?
Sort of, yeah.
Okay, then, Jeff, the question to you would be, I take it you don't agree with that.
Correct.
Okay. Why is it then that it seems so very often that the kinds of community efforts put forth by the left tend to look to the government for funding for them? Why is it that so often government money plays such a large role?
Well, I guess I can speak on a sort of a micro level, which is that social agencies I've been involved in, we have from time to time spent a lot of time doing fundraising, and if somebody comes along and says we will provide you with fundraising, then obviously we'll take it. That's just the short answer on that end of it. As to why the government offers it or why left-wing governments tend to offer it, I think it's because they recognize that social agencies are often a good place to put money to get things done. For instance, in a way this is sort of a crossing over that left-right boundary again, but what I had heard particularly in the early 90s from the NDP government was that they wanted to fund small private nonprofit corporations, social agencies, to run all kinds of programs because they thought they were more efficient than running them as a government bureaucracy, so they would contract them out. As to whether the work needs to be done in the first place or not, I think Bob might disagree and say, for instance, the one agency I'm thinking of does employment work, trying to get people back into employment. A lot of people would argue that maybe that shouldn't be done at all by government.
Well, I think the main reason the left-wing governments offer all these incentives and benefits is to buy votes, and I think that's the main motivation.
You don't think people would go in this direction without those incentives?
Well, listen, if somebody offers you free health care and free education, and you actually believe that they're going to offer it to you for free or at a cheaper rate than you can get it elsewhere, you're going to convince an awful lot of people to go along with that, even though it's not going to work. It never has worked anywhere it's tried. It's just a credit card system, and when the credit card's up to the end, it's all over and done with.
Oh, we disagree with about that, yeah. Obviously, but having said that, it's,
well,
it's
how
not
can
anybody
you
thinks it's free.
Aren't
we all
in
know
that
we're paying taxes.
Today?
It's just a question of whether we think we're paying, whether it's more efficient to do it as all of us together in a government system,
see,
or whether it's better to buy private insurance.
I would have
you have to pay for somebody's profit.
I would have defined a right-winger as being a person who's obsessed with government efficiency, but Jeff, you seem to be a little right-wing in this regard. You're always talking about efficiency, as though efficiency were a moral standard or a standard on which a government should operate. I don't think
products.
A government has to... Well, that's not a government job. A government is is an agency of force created to... So we have a referee in our society.
But it's going to be a big job. And it's going to be a big company or a big government. They'll run it. Healthcare is a big thing. You're not going to have a little entity.
Well, if you look at the whole industry as one big massive collective, which I know the left is tendent to do, I don't see it as that. I see it as millions of patients, millions of doctors, millions of healthcare practitioners, insurance companies. I see it as the broken up matrix of all these individual people interacting to form a marketplace. When you go to a big collective single-celled amoeba type of approach to health care and education, you're going to get what you pay for. You're going to get one
economy
massive
of scale.
Mess. Economy of scale is not what you're getting at all. Absolutely
this is
not.
Talk of the Town, left, right, and center, a regular feature here on Wednesdays on the program. You are invited to join us, too, at 643-1290. If you're a Cantel Cellular customer, it's a free call at Star 1290. Ivan joins us. Good morning, Ivan.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
I'm neither left or ring. I just take left or right. I just take responsibility for all my actions. That's mm-hmm. what I do. Mm-hmm. For instance, Bob is very kind to the left-wingers. For instance, when I went to start my business in 1975, I didn't go out and take a look for the bank to give me money. I didn't go to the government. The day I started my business, I didn't have my mortgage payment. I didn't have my car payment. So what did I do? I mortgaged my house. I mortgaged the rest of my car. I mortgaged my wife and family. That's what I did. But we can see what the left does to us. Bob Rae ruined this province. Gave us $100 billion debt, a $10 billion deficit. And now everybody blames Harris. No, I'm not a Harris fan. He's done a lot of things that I don't believe in. But it's not his fault. It's Ray's fault. It's the left's fault that it's all happening.
All right, thank you for the call, Ivan.
Have a great
Appreciate
day.
Appreciate it. Jeff, I want to follow that up for a minute. I don't think there's any disputing that the last left-wing government we had in this province was the Ray government, and they did increase public spending to a unconscionable degree, I think, doubled the debt and so on in the 5 years they were in. Many people looked at them as being a classic modern left-wing government. They did deal with some of the fiscal realities eventually and so on. But can you or do you defend the economic record of the of Ontario's last truly left-wing government?
Oh, sure. And when it comes to deficit spending, of course, the left did not invent deficit spending. That we've got all kinds of right-wing governments, particularly some of the western provinces, Saskatchewan, for instance, that ran debt-free until they got a Tory government. And the Tories ran up a huge deficit there. You've got BC that historically runs a low deficit, historically, at least for the last number of years, has been an NDP government. The reason we got huge deficit in Ontario was because of the recession that started in 1990. If the government had cut $10 billion in spending each year, the province would look an awful lot different than it does today. The problem is that we haven't come back from it, and the disagreement now is how do we deal with having come through that crisis, how do we patch things up? Everybody going into the last election was agreeing we've got to get rid of the deficit. We can't continue to run these deficits. It's only a question of how you go about getting rid of it. And we see a perfect example of two different approaches between the Liberals federally and the Harris government provincially. Now, some may argue that the federal government has been more artful in the way they've made cuts, because they've certainly made huge cuts.
Well, I'm glad you hear you say that, because I'm one of them that think they've been very artful.
But, you know, they did things like deferring them for a year. It's like we're going to announce a cut now, but it won't come in for a mm-hmm. year. And that very effectively diffused public debate about it. People that weren't going to deal with it when it was announced because it's a year away. By the time it comes up on us, it's like, well, you should have talked to us a year ago. Whereas the Tories have gone for a much more confrontational style. I don't think that's a function of being right or left. It's just the way that they've chosen to run things.
643-1290 is the telephone number. You can dial that left-handed or right-handed. We don't care. And you're always welcome on the program. Jim's with us. Good morning, Jim.
Yeah, question. Bob made the comment there that he believed that the right was total freedom. Was that correct, Bob?
Well, that's what I support. I wouldn't say that the traditional right wing is that necessarily. Traditionally, if you're going to define right and left along a freedom axiom, I think what you'd mostly find is that the left has been supportive of basic civil liberties, civil freedoms, and the right generally is identified with economic freedoms.
But I guess you want total freedom economically, but not...
And civilly.
Well, to the right total freedom, that's anarchy.
Absolutely not. Freedom does not mean you can do whatever you want to do. I mean, this is an aberration of the term. The term means it's a social concept. It's not an individualistic concept. It's a concept that says that you and I, as individuals, before and under the law of our government, have equal rights and equal freedoms.
We're not free then if you even put the law in, because the law is imposed by somebody else.
Well, you know, if you look in a dictionary, there's 50 definitions of the word freedom, and you're using a very loose social definition. But this is a political debate. This is about left and right. And when you're talking politics, you're talking about freedom in terms of government, in terms of politics. And in that sense, freedom is a very specific thing. It is a thing under which people have individual rights before and under the law. It is a limit on our freedom of action, so to speak. I mean, it only makes sense. What value or definition can you give to freedom if everybody could do everything? Would that be what a free society is about?
Well, that's my point. On the spectrum of left to right, total right is anarchy and total left is complete government control.
Well,
I don't want neither.
No kidding. I would not agree with your assessment there. I think most people would say total left is like communism and total right is fascism.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Fascism is a long way from anarchy. Fascism is very, very close in many ways to socialism. It's going around the clock, as I talked about before.
Well,
as you move halfway around the circle, you find there are a tremendous number of differences. As you move to the top of the circle, you find that they both come together.
Well,
by definition, they were both
because the essential political difference between fascism and socialism is that under socialism they view property as a collective entity. The public property. Under fascism, they still allow private property in name but control the property, which is why fascism generally seems to be a much more efficient state. Because they do know that people who at least have their name on the title deed have some vested interest in keeping up their storefront or whatever else.
Also, if you look at the political spectrum, on the extreme right, you want to have zero taxes, and on the extreme left, you want to have 100% taxes. So somewhere in the middle, we have to find that happy hunting ground.
Well, I think that's a very interesting comment. We talked a little bit about that last week how much taxes we would put up with. Jim, thank you for your call today.
Bye-bye.
I think it is important to note, gentlemen, and if you disagree with me, please say so, but I think it is important to note that what some people consider the ultimate left and the ultimate right, fascism and communism, are both socialist doctrines in that
Absolutely.
Sense. They're
yes.
both collectivist doctrines,
yes.
even though they come from...
And the thing they share in common is the application of government force, to force people into those collective groups, although the stated purpose for the collective group is something different. Again, I think that both extremes are a sign of a society that is no longer a civilization.
Jeff, you're nodding your head a little bit. You're shaking your head a little bit here.
I guess... Both of them are governments that are extremely intrusive, no question about that, and totalitarian. And I'm trying to get my head around what Bob sees as sort of an ideal of government. And by definition, it would seem that it would be a government that's much less than it is. The challenge would be to find somebody who wanted to get elected to say, I want far less power than I have now.
It would be a government that's limited to what I see as the role of government. The government was never... an agency by which we all get together and buy cheap products. It was never an agency that was formed so that we could provide health care to people or to provide education. Those things came way after the institution of government.
But government's an arbitrary term. Government, you have a government if you have two people who get together and agree to do something together. There's no sort of arbitrary saying of this is what government is and wasn't. You can say historically it was this or it was that, but there's no primacy to that. It doesn't give any more force to your argument.
That's not true at all. In a free society, the government gains its authority, its legitimate authority over the citizens it governs via their consent. Now, the problem is, how do we define consent? When does someone consent to their government? Do we consent collectively through the democratic process where 51% can tell 49% what to do? Or do we have a more individualistic approach where each individual can individually consent to certain things?
But what, are you saying you could opt out from certain laws then if you don't like them?
Well, certainly anything in the sense of wealth transfer, which is not a proper government function. I want to live in a country where I know that the referee in the game is neutral, that he's not going to pick sides. He's not going to be on labor's side or business's side or even be arbitrarily opposed to a criminal to understand that everyone who's charged before the law has rights.
But wouldn't, by definition, if you can opt out of a law, the people who opt out will be all the ones who aren't doing well under it. They'll say, well, I don't like the rules anymore. I'm not playing anymore.
Well, by the nature of a law, you cannot opt out of it. What you have to do is define laws which are just and pursue them to the fullest extent possible. And I think that's always been the debate historically between left and right, is trying to get down to that point of what constitutes a just law. And I think we're getting close in realizing, and I still insist that the primary thing we have to do is get that application of force out of our legal system. Force is only a recursive thing, not something that should be initiated.
This is Talk of the Town on 1290 CJBK, left, right, and center with Bob Metz, Jeff Schlemmer. I'm Jim Chapman, and Bill's our next caller. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
I think what we need is a government that's in the center, but we don't have any governments that are in the center.
What would characterize a government in the center?
In the center would look at how everything affects basically the middle class, well, mostly the middle class, because they constitute the majority of the people in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Like, say, people, families, like from 20,000 to 50, and I think these officials should learn, like, what it's like to live on, you know, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a family.
Mm-hmm.
And realize how these policies affect people that live on these incomes,
mm-hmm.
instead of just representing the rich people or the other part swinging down to help the poor people. You got to help the poor people a bit, but you know, you can't take away incentive if you're going from a left point of view, and if you're going from a right point of view, you can't say profits are everything and then have businesses not give anything back to the community when they're making major profits.
Bill, you're suggesting that the government should represent the center, not the rich or the poor.
No, I'm saying they should represent all people, not just one aspect, but if they're going to represent one aspect, then maybe they should go with the majority.
Well, what do you think they should represent? For example, say you believe in abortion and your neighbor doesn't. Say you believe in Sunday
shopping.
Well, then
they should allow free votes. Well, I think the government should allow the members to have free votes so that we'll have a true democracy. That's what I believe.
Well, then what if the things that you believe in get outvoted? Would you be happy to live in a society like that where everything you believe in and all the things you value, because other people may not share your values, they won't allow you to live your own life? Is that the kind of a world you want to live in?
Well, that's kind of the world we live in right now anyway.
Well, I agree. Don't you think it's time we changed it? And maybe instead of talking about voting for other people, that we just voted in the marketplace and made our own choices and got government right out of it completely.
The problem with that, though, is that once everything's in the marketplace, then everything's derived on profit. And when you're delivering government services to people, then the poor people are disadvantaged because they can't pay for those services, and the government's supposed to represent all people.
Well, you know, profit makes prices go down, so if profit's an evil, it's got to be...
It's not an evil. I'm not saying it's an evil.
Right.
I'm saying there's a place and a limit on profit, too. Like, you have to pass it on to the workers. Otherwise, you have savage capitalism, which is the same as communism. So if you're not passing
but
it
no,
on...
So no.
The market, if all the workers are getting a little bit of money so that they can purchase products, then that helps the economy too.
But Bill, consider the contradiction in your statement. You're talking about there should be a limit on profits, and I agree, there is one. It is the marketplace. A person cannot make more profit than, you know, it's an old saying, what the market will bear. If people aren't buying your product at the price you've got on it, you're going to go out of business. So I wouldn't worry about anybody's profit. What you've got to worry about as a consumer is prices. That's what means something to you.
The thing is, though, there's still, you can say that about discretionary income, but there's still certain things that you have to buy. You have to buy your butter, your milk, and there's certain things you can't get away from buying.
Well, absolutely, and aren't you glad the government doesn't control those things, or you'd be really paying a lot of money for it?
Well, thanks for your call today. It's good to hear from you. And we've got Chuck up next. Hello, Chuck.
Morning, Jim.
Yes, sir.
Morning, folks. Bob, I talked to you before, and we were talking about the freedom thing, and that one gentleman come on and said the same thing, that your freedom, and I've never seen anybody so, that has got me so confused and so backward and a hypocritical thing is what you're talking about. You say you're on the right, and yet you're on the left, and then you're on the right, and you're on the left, and I just can't figure it out. Like, you were talking about some people that, I just can't remember, but anyway, about the society of people and the way of the life, but I was going to ask you what you think about the Mennonites and people like that, and you were talking about Mother Teresa. She does what she wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were talking, and then there's the Mennonites and the Quakers that come up and help the people.
Wonderful.
And, you know, they spend their money socially and split everything.
Right.
And so
and
what
they
do, you
do
think
so
about,
voluntarily.
What do you think about those people? I mean, do you think that they're on the left or they're on the right?
I wouldn't put them on a scale like that. I don't, you know, see, it's interesting whether where you go on the left or right, whether you're defining left or right in terms of freedom or in terms of force. You'll get a different response. But I see nothing wrong with the Mennonite or Quaker lifestyle. They're not coming to my door and saying, you must join our Mennonite group or you must become a Quaker. And to me, that would be a forced collective approach, which is what I see as a left wing.
They're also not asking for your money.
Nor that.
No, they're not also asking, but and they go out and help people.
Absolutely.
Where everything goes on, the Quakers and everything. And this is what I was wondering, what you think of those? With
pure spirit of altruism. Wonderful.
To me, they're the left-hand people.
Yeah, they're on the left?
Yeah, I think they are. Can you say they're not on the left?
Because they're a collective, you mean?
Yeah, because they're...
Well, let's ask Jeff, do they belong on your side of the spectrum, the groups like the Quakers, the Mennonites, and so on, that do operate in a somewhat collective society, but generally speaking have no interest in government intervention nor in government money?
Yeah, no, I would say that that's sort of a classic left-wing idea that I go back to the idea that on the left, what we're trying to do is work together. On the right, you're trying to work individually.
Show me a left-wing country anywhere in the world where they voluntarily allow people to join in their left-wing utopia.
I don't understand the distinction between left and right in terms of voluntarism, because from what I can see, left-wing right governments and right-wing governments tell you what to do and when. They both tell you the way it's going to be.
To some degree, and I wouldn't defend either of those applications. But, you know, I can see where Chuck's coming from here, and I remember your call, Chuck. I mean, you're calling a collective something that you see as a social thing, and it is social, but remember the difference between right and left is not collective per se. It's voluntary or force. On the left, you've got a basically forced collective where people have to become part of a group, and on I don't even like to call it the right, because even the right, this is where labels start falling off, also have their forced collectives, but in a free society, people have their collectives voluntarily, and that's what the Mennonites and Quakers are doing.
Chuck, we appreciate your call today. Up next is Dave. Good morning, Dave.
Morning, Jim.
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to make a comment basically aimed towards Jeff, and I remember his comments last week on talking about Sunday shopping and how he didn't think we should have it, and I always find it odd how people have their own sort of little world model of how they want things to be. And he said, you know, he thought it'd be wonderful if we didn't have Sunday shopping and things were at a different pace. And I wondered if Jeff, you know, ever took his family to a Sunday matinee at the theater, if the guy selling the popcorn, the ticket guy, enjoyed working on Sundays, or if he ever got gas on Sundays, or, you know, went to dinner at a restaurant on Sundays. It's kind of a fallacy of... that, you know, everybody has Sunday off and to enjoy it. There's all kinds of industries, from emergency services to service industries, where people have always worked Sundays.
I guess getting gas depends on what restaurant you go to, too.
That might be, too. The Mexican restaurant might cause
that. Well, Jeff, what about that? You did make that comment last week. You thought we would be better off. What about, have you ever bought gas on a Sunday? Obviously.
Oh, sure. I'm a total hypocrite. I have to tell you going into this that when I talked about the left at the start, I said these are things that you aspire to. You aspire to try to lead a life of selflessness. You try to, like I said, from my perspective, I guess it's a question of sort of what kind of world do you want to leave to your kids? What do you want to be able to say you did at the end of your life? From my end of it, it would be nice to be able to say, I tried to do the right thing. I tried to help people who needed help. You know, I tried to create a world that was less polluted than it was. Those are the kinds of values that I personally like. Now, as to whether I would impose Sunday shopping on someone else, I don't know that I, or not Sunday shopping, I don't know that I would. And as far as whether I take advantage of buying things on Sunday, yeah, I do, because I fall short of my ideals all the time.
Well, aren't you saying then, Jeff, that, you know, you're saying that your ideal of selflessness places you in a hypocritical situation, and this is exactly what I'm saying. It's not in accordance with human nature. You have to be untrue to yourself to be able to carry on this ideology.
Well, I come back to this Christian thing again, that nobody's perfect, and what we try and do is try to live up to a certain set of standards, whether we can or not. But
I guess, as an
idealist, I think people are basically good. People would basically like to do the right thing. And I don't think people are basically selfish at root. I don't think that's what's natural for us. We're selfish to the extent that we want to stay alive, we want to keep our families alive, but beyond that, we've got the rest of our day to fill. And I would suggest that the human condition is that we'd like to try and create a better world with the rest of our day rather than just accumulate things.
You see, what you're calling selfish there, I would call self-interest, rational self-interest. Selfishness, to me, is when one individual wants to live at another individual's expense without that individual's say-so. And that seems to me what socialism's all based about.
Well, certainly the right is based on that.
Absolutely not. There's a big difference between a person who wants to take, you know, John Smith wants to take Joe's money away from him, and Joe just wants to keep his money. He's not selfish because he wants to keep the money he earned.
No,
he earned it.
On the right, we have a system where in a free market, the tendency is towards oligopolies. We end up with very few corporations running things. So, for instance, if I want to have freedom to put my money where I want and have the services that I want, I don't have that, because the system has evolved such that now I have politicians, but senior executives deciding for me where I'll be able to put my money and how much I'll pay for service charges.
And you want the government to decide for you instead?
No, I'm saying that doesn't distinguish the right from the left. Both of them are intrusive.
Let's go back to the phones. David, I appreciate your call today.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, bye-bye.
643-1290, and Gord's with us. Good morning, Gord.
Hi, how are you, Jim?
Great, thank you.
Yes, in a perfect world, I guess we wouldn't really need left or right, would we? You know, like, I always think the economy should serve the people, not the other way around. And I think that, in a lot of senses, we have left-wing ideologies in our government. Otherwise, if we didn't, we just have a polluted world, and the might would be right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so Mr. Metz's idea that, you know, like, we don't have any voluntary left ideas, we do. We incorporate it in our democracy.
Well, I understand what you're saying, Gord, but, you know, listen to your statement that the economy must serve people, or people, how did you say it, the economy should serve people and not the other way around?
Yes.
Well, people
how
are...
How do you pick up on that?
People are the economy.
Yes, they are.
So, I don't know, like, people serve each other. They do that in an economic way. They don't use force. They trade value for value. That's what a marketplace is all about.
Well, we have to have checks and balances. That's why, like I said, we...
But the marketplace is the check
that,
and balance.
We invented government to have a higher society so everybody can get involved.
Well, that we need a government for laws and to protect our individual rights so that other people don't violate our rights. But when you're in a marketplace, you're negotiating. You're out there. You know, the check is in balances are all in place. Mr. X wants $100 for his product. Mr. Y only wants to pay 80. If they can't agree on 90, they both go their separate ways. Nobody pulls a gun out on anybody, and nobody forces the one guy to sell the other guy the product cheaper or forces the other guy to pay more.
But if one of those guys has 80% of the market, they'll tell you what the price is going to be, and that's what it ends up being.
He could have 100% of the market, and he can't control it. You know, Paul Hellyer, I once debated Paul Hellyer telling me how the steel industry in Hamilton had a monopoly on the market because it was the only steel industry around. And I said, well, you know, if people can't afford to buy their steel at whatever price they're charging, they're going out of business.
But we've had tons of cases of price fixing over the years. Don't tell me that doesn't exist.
Well, price fixing exists when government gets involved and fixes prices. We've got price fixing in education.
OPEC is not a government.
OPEC collapsed, and it was a totally illegitimate venture, nothing that I supported.
But the thing is that they tried. We need the checks and balances for it, because if we don't have it, then they'll just run away with it.
Well, I agree we need government to prevent, for example, one businessman from moving in forcibly on another guy who he's competing with or something like that, using force, but not using the marketplace, not offering a better
product. That's their tool.
Let me ask you a question, and I'm going to ask you to think for a moment before you answer, and I'm going to ask you to be absolutely honest with me.
Okay.
All right. In our Canadian economy today,
mm-hmm.
you pay more money for staples like bread and milk than you would if we had a truly free economy, because we don't. They are controlled by marketing boards. Those controls are there to allow farmers to make a, quote, decent living. Some of them make a very good living. And ostensibly to ensure that the supply will remain relatively stable. The reality, however, the price you pay for that, for looking after your neighbor, the farmer, and having some stability, is that those prices are stable at a significantly higher rate than in areas that don't have those kind of price supports. Would you rather pay the higher price that you pay now for the for those benefits, or would you rather pay what the market would require, knowing that it's going to be significantly less, but it's not going to protect your neighbor, the farmer, in the same way? He's going to have to get out there and compete, and it's not going to protect the supply by government fiat. It's going the only supply, the only guarantee you're going to have is that if there is a demand, there will be a supply. Which one of those two would you rather have?
Well, I was watching CBC, I forget what program, Marketplace or something like that, last night. And they're out west, they are slowly getting rid of the wheat boards, mm-hmm. or they're letting the Americans in.
Yes.
More or less.
Yeah.
And there is a fear that they will take it over. It's okay to have, you know, money invested and have, you know,
well,
a population.
I think they will take it over. I don't think there's any question.
But then we won't have control of our own food production.
But you'll pay a lot less for your food.
But Gord, you do have control, and what you're worried about having taken over is Canadians' choices.
Well, no.
The only way they can move in and make a success over Canadian business is if Canadians choose in droves to choose that product over the home-done product.
I want to come back to the question I asked you, though. Which would you prefer? Do you want to pay less for your goods, or do you want to subsidize your fellow Canadians? I'll be absolutely honest.
Well, actually, I do want to subsidize my fellow
so
Canadians.
So do I.
Because it provides the
well,
type
I don't
of society
sure,
I
don't
want.
I don't have a problem. Now, I got next question for you. Do you ever go out and shop price on items?
Yes, I do.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
So you would go to a large superstore, a box store, to buy a product if it was cheaper than at your corner store?
Depending on the quality, of course.
Well,
you have to weigh price and quality.
Let's say the quality is the same.
Mm-hmm.
If you could go to your corner store and support your local merchant, mm-hmm. or go to the big box and support some anonymous multinational corporation, but you're going to save significant money, which place are you going to shop at?
Touche, you're right. I would shop at the cheaper place.
But that paradigm, though, breaks down in the sense that it's not clear that you'll pay more for your bread just because we have a controlled industry. The reason we control it isn't just to support Canadian farmers. It's also so we do have that control so that another country can't come in.
But we do pay a higher price for
no,
it.
No, but it
our countries have lost their own
that's
agriculture.
Not, you know, that's not right. What happens, though, at the end of the day, if we took away all the subsidies, then all of a sudden all of our wheat comes from Argentina or somewhere. We get dependent on them. All of a sudden a government comes in or somebody, a company comes in and decides, I'm going to charge what the market in Canada will bear, and I think they can pay a lot more money than they're paying right now. The reason we do it is to try and avoid monopolistic practices where you end up with one supplier paying or that we have to go to on bended knee to buy our stuff and then pay a lot more at the end of the day.
So you believe in creating a monopoly to avoid monopolies. It's an interesting
word. Gord, thank you for your call today. We're going to pause for a moment. Left, right, and center continues right after this. And Tony joins us. Hi, Tony.
How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Good. I'm sorry, I just listened to the last half hour of their show, and it really got me going here because I think about this quite a bit. And you can argue in detail, I suppose, from a left point, from a right point, and, you know, in great detail. But my question to your guests, both Jeff or Bob, is this. Can you illustrate, and I think somebody mentioned it a few minutes ago, a country that's, let's say in Jeff's case, that has operated in a fashion that you like, that suits your maybe ideological output, or view rather, that you can say is successful. And I hear the buzzwords like collective flying around, and I always get scared when I hear words like that, because I think of collective farms in Russia, and I see documentaries, and I see their state of utopia, and you know, how everybody's happy and living in this fairy tale land that was promised to them.
I think Israel might be a better example of that. Israel certainly has kibbutzes that are more similar, but certainly the problem with Russia was that communism was sort of a cover that was used by a bunch of thugs to go in and take over a country, that nobody would suggest that Russia was a happy place to live back in the 20s and 30s. I think by definition, you can't look to a model that's sort of a pure model, obviously, that they're all mixed, but Norway seems to be a country where I've read that they seem to get along okay. They have a reasonable standard of living. The average wage of chief executive officers is three times what it is for their workers. They've got a strong social system. Not that I know that much about it, because I don't, but those are the kinds of things that I wish we had.
In my case, I looking around the world, there's no perfect country. I think Canada and the United States are the two closest things to my ideal, but there's a heck of a lot wrong with them. Both are mixed economies. They've you'd have to go piecemeal through policy by policy and pick out what's good and what's bad in each country. And hopefully, as history carries on, we will continue that process and get rid of what we know doesn't work and which doesn't suit human nature and adapt those things that do.
Tony, I have to leave it there. Thank you very much for your call. And Les has been waiting. Good morning, Les.
Oh, I'm sorry. I hope I have enough time, but I think that put way too much weight on economy, and maybe economically makes sense to buy something cheap for the short term.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is that collectively, as a whole world society,
mm-hmm.
because they say that the true man is who thinks about the world he lives in.
Yes.
And as a whole world society, can we afford what we're doing right now 30 years from now?
Well, what is the option?
Collectively, we truly can listen to the people who are having the right amount of information to say what to do. Because the problem is in this society is that money will give you the greatest advantage over anybody.
So are you saying that we then have to force people to pay attention to people who really know what's going on?
Nature will force us. That is the problem. Nothing in a free society, if we all decide we're dumb enough to do what we're doing collectively, then we deserve to die.
All right. Thanks for the call, Les. I don't mean to cut you off, but we want to get Robert on. Good morning, Robert.
Hi.
Got about a minute left.
Okay, Jim. Well, I was distressed at the way that people are characterizing profits on your show. And that's basically what I think what the show is about. And people on the left see profit as evil, and people on the right see them as beneficial. Because, you see, profits imply that... there's success in whatever the undertaking is. That's what profit means. Profit, from a dictionary point of view, means like a return on your investment, you know, a value, a benefit, that kind of thing. So that really the word profit is a synonym for success, and that's what the only way you can make profits, unless you're either a criminal or a government, to do it through virtuous voluntary action.
All right, Robert, thank you for your call and your comments today, and thanks to Robert and Jeff for coming in again. A pleasure as always. We'll see you again next week.
Thank you.
Folks, if there's anything you'd like to hear our guests discuss on Left, Right, and Center, don't be afraid to drop us a line and let us know about it. For Jim and Ryan and Don and Jeff and Bob, take care of each other, mind how you go, and we'll see you tomorrow for the next edition of Talk of the Town. Bye-bye.